Hello, great to be here with you today. I'm doing something a little different. A couple of months ago, you may recall if you were here, I interviewed a couple of people around a topic, and the topic was dealing with life's curveballs. And I had some great feedback from that in the sense of people really enjoyed hearing people's stories. And so I thought I'd do something similar again today around a different topic, and that is dealing with change. Now, as Melburnians, right, this week, I think we should have change down pat. We should be the most flexible bunch of people when it comes to change here in Melbourne. Today's gorgeous. Don't know about tomorrow. But yes, in all seriousness, this topic is something that we all have to deal with. We're dealing with change consistently. I think change is up there with paying taxes and, unfortunately, experiencing death. It's part of life. And so, you know, I know change can bring so much joy and excitement on one level of the spectrum, but on the other end, it can bring a lot of resistance and fear and everything in between. I've just experienced that in my household recently. 4 years ago, I put out into the ether this idea of, hey, let's get a dog. Well, the house really wasn't set up for a dog. And then through COVID, we moved house and it was much better suited to a dog. But all of a sudden, I had the coldest feet ever because I thought, oh, well, having a dog means I've got to look after it. It means I can't go away when I want to go away. It means change of routine. I resisted, I became fearful. My sister was cranky with me, saying, come on, are we going to do it? This was your idea in the first place. Until I thought, right, we came back from Europe. Lara gets COVID, and what does she do? She sends me the cutest puppy on my phone. And the next thing I know, we've got Pepper, our sheepadoodle, who I think I've got a photo of her. She's pretty cute. Now, this other photo, I think there's another photo of her. That's not a knife, just by the way. Taken on Halloween, but it was not a knife. That is Pepper with my gardening trowel and deciding that anything that she can bite and chew, she will. Has it meant a lot of change? Absolutely. My routine has completely changed. My quiet time, I'm struggling to find. Sleep-ins don't exist anymore. You know, there's been a lot of a change in the last 6 weeks, but is there a lot of joy? Absolutely. And I'm noticing a part of myself. I'm giving of myself in a different way. That's what change can do. Change is a part of breathing. It's like breathing and eating. It is part of our lives, and we're constantly transitioning through change, through different life stages, from childhood to youth to young adults to adults. We experience change in our workplace, in our schooling, in our living arrangements, when we partner up, when we have children, when the children leave home, when we retire, and eventually when we pass away. And, you know, when we come to Christ, we actually are choosing, in following Christ, we're choosing to a life of change because we're choosing to be transformed into the image of Jesus. You know, we can desire change and want change and we're excited when it comes. But other times we may feel frustrated and disappointed that it doesn't come soon enough when we want it. Other times change comes when we least expect it. It can be thrust upon us. And I think we've all experienced that in the last couple of years with COVID. It can be unwanted. You know, even in the best circumstances of change, there is loss, whether that's a loss of routine, maybe a relationship, expectations, there is a loss of some description that we are having to adjust. So in this massive topic this morning, I've invited two Baysiders to come and share their stories of change with us, all various varieties of stories. And so I'd like to welcome Jesse Strickland and Catherine Cloherty to the platform and give them a warm welcome. You're in the centre, the rose.
Amongst the thorns, right?
No, Yeah, we're the thorns, Jesse. No, welcome. Welcome very... Just before we get started, let's just hear just a tiny bit about you both. So, Catherine, I know you've been at Bayside a long time. Do you want to share with everyone?
I just confessed to Rob next March. It'll be 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. But look at my face. You would never know.
No.
Why are you laughing?
So, Catherine, you were part of Cheltenham campus and then you went part of Frankston campus and you're back to Cheltenham campus.
Correct, yes.
Yeah, so yep. Long history and you've seen all various things throughout history of Bayside.
Yes, churches changed, chuck it out. That was one.
Chuck it out. I think it's chuck it out. Fantastic. Well, yep. I look forward to hearing your stories this morning. And Jesse, not 20 years. How long have you been part of Bayside?
I actually joined before this little thing we had called COVID-19. You know, it wasn't supposed to last for very long. I think 6 months we were told at the time.
Yeah.
So that puts me at Bayside probably now for about three and a half years. I think that sounds about right.
Yeah. And you came to here, but you're part of our sort of hybrid congregation.
Yes. So it works out quite well for me. I live in Preston because I hear that in the southeastern suburbs, your dogs carry knives. So, yes. So... But no, yes. So you may see me occasionally doing coffee cart and those sorts of things. So I do help out. But the hybrid model really works for me because it means, you know, don't have to spend that hour and a half in traffic trying to get home afterwards. Lovely people, but sometimes it's just, it's a very convenient way to be able to access church and the resources. Yeah.
Yep. So Jesse's part of our online community as well as being here once a month on coffee cart and meeting all you lovely people. Wonderful. Okay, well, to kick it off, I want you to both maybe describe to me a feeling or the emotions that you have when we talk about change. What does it strike up in you, Catherine?
I would say in years gone by, it was always like, oh my gosh, what now? You know, like what things are never going to settle down. And so it was always an anxious time. But over the time that I've been a Christian, that's evolved now and it's more like, oh, what's next? What's happening now? And so I don't have the anxiety about things changing anymore because my security is in knowing that whatever happens, God's got it under control. And although I don't know what it looks like, I can trust him. So I would say there's been a transition. I used to feel anxious about it, and now I'm a bit more like, okay, what's happening now and what am I going to find out? And yeah, it's more of a anticipation.
So, so that's your approach as well, because when change comes, you're like, okay, I'm going to anticipate it. It's coming.
Yeah.
Great. And what about you, Jesse? How do you feel about the word change?
I wish I could say I could. I felt the same way that Catherine felt about it, but that's not the case with me. Depending on kind of the circumstances, probably over time, maybe nervously optimistic. I think that's probably a good way to describe it. But like, I think the majority of us out there, change is quite difficult, depending on the circumstances. Yeah.
And is that because it brings about loss or fear of the unknown?
I think when we talk about change, it's really about you're letting go of something to maybe gain something else, or you're growing. Mm. It's kind of like the muscles that I don't have because I don't go to the gym like I should. But if you want muscles, you have to put in the work, and that means changing your routine and doing those sorts of things and investing. I think that's a pretty good analogy. We're surrounded by change, right? The seasons, animals growing, us growing. It would be a pretty, I guess we wouldn't really have a civilization if we stayed children or babies all our lives, right?
Yeah. That's great. I love your analogy of the gym. So, Jesse, tell us a time in your life when change was a really positive, good thing for you.
Sure. So in case everyone out there doesn't know, I have a bit of an accent, in case you haven't heard it, right? So... I moved to Australia, I think, about 14 years ago, maybe thereabouts, from the U.S. So I grew up in a small town in North Carolina called Goldsboro. Nothing much happens there. We do have a military base. That's probably our only claim to fame. And I grew up in a very, simple environment. All the sort of things you hear about the Deep South, the stereotypes, that was my life. Right, so I grew up in a trailer park. I had parents that had problems with addiction, alcoholism. We didn't have money. My father had left when I was quite young. So I was surrounded by this environment that always made me think, is this what my life is going to be? am I going to continue this cycle of poverty that I see all around me, or do I want something better for myself? And I wanted something better for myself. So I had the opportunity to leave. I went off to college because that's what you do, right? Go from your little small town, go to the city, get a degree, and go and change the world. I was going to be a politician. That's what I was going to do, right? Rah, rah, rah. Everything was going to be great. But I met an Australian who was there on business and said, hey, why don't you move to Australia? It's a really great country. Now, I had never been on a plane. I didn't have a passport. I didn't know that you had a place called Canberra that was your capital. I'd only heard, and then I was going to some place called Melbourne that I knew we had a place in Florida, didn't know they had one in Australia, right? So, okay, why? Let's give it a go. I didn't really have much keeping me in the small town, and I'm sure we'll get into that in just a bit, Pastor Sandra, but got on the plane, came to Australia, T-shirt, shorts, flip-flops, thongs, to Melbourne, right, with palm trees and sunshine. It was, I think, the 22nd of May. It was cold. It was raining. There was no sunshine, and there were no kangaroos. And I thought, what have I gotten myself into? What is this?
Welcome to Melbourne.
Welcome to Melbourne.
And so where's the positive part?
Yeah. Funny you should say that. So after getting to Melbourne and settling in, so I started my degree at RMIT, and there was so much opportunity here for me, right? I was in a city for the first time of a decent size. I had my education. I started my career. So I work in human resources and had done a degree at RMIT and started my first job within the shipping industry at a company called Australian National Line, which used to be owned by the government. And it was around the time the GFC happened. And Australia was really lucky during the GFC. We really recovered well. And all these things I had wanted for myself started happening, right? I had connections with people I didn't have before. I wasn't surrounded by poverty and addiction anymore. I wasn't surrounded by narrow-minded kind of people that I had grown up with in this small town. I felt safe, probably for the first time I really had in my entire life.
Wow.
And, you know, it really bothers me to this day when I hear people, you know, maybe being quite critical of Australia. And there are things we need to change in this country, as most countries. But for me, when we talk about the land of milk and honey, that has been Australia for me. And I love this country very much. It's been great to me.
Wonderful. Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for sharing. And what about you, Catherine? Your experience of positive change?
Where do I start? So growing up, my security was in my academics. I was a good student at school. I didn't have a lot of security from my family. So that's where I found my self-worth. And I found that there were a lot of barriers to me actually extending that. I wasn't going to talk about this, but why not? I wanted to study aeronautical engineering at ADFA. And I went to the recruitment office when I was in year 12. And at the time, I had asthma. And so they said, no, you can't do it. You're not eligible. And I was at a loss. What do I do now? And I ended up having a conversation with my family about, well, what should I do at university? And my dad sort of said, why are we talking about this? I'm not supporting you for that. You need to go to work. And so that was a bit of a blow. And I ended up working for about 6 years or so. And then I was like, no, I really need to go to university. And so it was, how do I say? So I was fortunate. My mum worked at a TAFE, and she had access to career progression kind of things. And so it was encouraging and wonderful. And I ended up going to university when I was 24. And I'm currently studying my fifth postgraduate certificate, so I've never left.
You mentioned to me you've got 5 degrees.
Well, not 5 degrees. I've got a degree and then 4 postgraduates. So
amazing.
Yeah. So that was wonderful to actually realise that the issues in my family weren't going to stop me from becoming who God wanted me to be. I just needed some time to break free of that and to step out and go, no, this is actually the path that I'm meant to be on. That'll do.
Right. No, thank you. Yeah. So both of you have had these positive experiences. Was there a downside to those positive experiences or something that you had to deal with in terms of a loss? Catherine?
Oh, for me, it was just I'd been working full time for 6 years and I had a certain lifestyle and I was living out of home. And really, it was income. It was a big decision to leave my job and to study full time. But God even looked after me in that. I didn't think of this the other day, but I was working at a radiology group as a medical receptionist, and the company allowed me to stay working there on a Saturday morning at double time, even though I wasn't working there during the week, and that's what we used to do during the week. If you did Saturday mornings, it was double time, but that allowed me a decent amount of income to live on as a student.
Right.
Yeah. So, that with giving up that, I was almost having to start again. And all the people I was at uni with were 18 and I was 24 and I felt so old. But, I felt like I'd taken a big backwards step, but I hadn't really.
Yeah. So the loss of income, but then your needs were supplied during that time.
Exactly.
By the work on Saturday. Fantastic. Yeah. What about you, Jesse? Moving to Australia was a positive milk and honey experience. Was there a downside to that experience?
Most definitely. So I don't know if anyone in here, I'm sure we do have people that have travelled to the US. It's a very long ways, right? So when I first moved here, I didn't have very much in the way of money or career. And it meant, I missed out on weddings and birthdays and funerals and wasn't able to be around family members when, those times when you go through really difficult parts in your life and you really want family to be close to you. Also, it was kind of a time when my parents weren't very tech savvy, so it was very difficult to do phone calls and Facebook and FaceTime, things we have now. Hard to believe that 10 years ago it really wasn't so commonplace. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago. And I was actually here during George W. Bush's, when he was in office, and actually had some pretty hostile Australians that told me to go back to where I came from. It happened a few times. But I really stuck to it, and I always felt this is where God wanted me to be, and I was where I was meant to be, and this is where I should be.
Yeah, great. Thank you. In Genesis, we hear the story of Joseph, and if you know the story, Joseph has a dream, and he brags about that dream, which his brothers didn't really like the dream, and this guy ends up being sold into slavery and then in prison for a very long time. And I imagine for Joseph, he probably felt like change was never going to come. And so I want to pose the question, have you been in that situation where you felt change was never going to come, and how did you deal with it? Catherine.
Yep, I have. So when I was, backstory, my mum he came to Melbourne on a working holiday from New Zealand, and my dad came to Melbourne on a working holiday from Ireland, and they conceived me, and being good Catholics decided they better get married, but that didn't last because they were very young, they were 20 and 21, but my mum she was the person she wasn't able to cope with the breakup, and she was very bitter towards my father. My father ended up going back to Ireland, and she remarried, and I had a brother and sister, and so we were a happy family, except that I was a thorn in her side because I always reminded her of my father, and she wasn't able to love me the way perhaps a mother should. Excuse me.
It's okay, take your time.
So the result of that was that I became a very much a people pleaser because I was always trying to earn her love and always trying to be all things to all people and earn some love, like I just said. So it felt like through my childhood that there was something wrong with me inherently, that it was something in me, and mum would say occasionally, well, you're just like that because that's what your father was like, etc., and horrible things. So that was a long time, obviously. You know, I was only a baby, like I was under two when they separated. So really it was my whole life. And I used to think, it can't possibly be me. It's not something that I haven't done anything wrong. I'm always trying to make people happy. Mm. What's going on? How did I deal with that? Well, first of all, with those unhealthy aspirations to make everyone happy so that no one would be mad with me. But I became a Christian when I was 27 and started to discover that actually God loves me so much that he died for me. And, sorry.
That's okay. Can you get some water? Thanks. Take your time.
I'm going to tell a story, actually, that I'd forgotten had happened. I went for prayer ministry one time, and the thing that really spoke to me and made me realise what I was worth, it's a bit weird, this lady I was in prayer ministry with said, imagine two great big barrels, like wine barrels, in front of you. And I was like, okay. And she said, imagine one's filled with sperm and the other one's filled with eggs, and Jesus has picked out that sperm and that egg to create you. And I went, oh, that was a massive, massive realization for me that he created me the way I am for a reason and for a purpose. And that changed my whole everything. You know, he wanted me to be exactly who I am, and it doesn't matter what people say about me. Thank you.
So your perspective changed, not necessarily
completely, yeah.
The people around you may not have changed.
They didn't change. But what happened through that process then was I was able to learn about forgiveness. And I learned through my studies in psychology, I learned about how people grow and how they develop their attitudes and things. And I realised my mum didn't mean evil to me. She was broken. Mm. And she didn't mean that. And so because God gave me that revelation, I was able to forgive her. And it didn't change the way she behaved towards me, but it made me able to not worry about it so much. Mm. Like I would turn to God and go, no, God says I'm worth so much that I don't need to worry about her judgments, and the way she's treating me like that is just because of her brokenness. Yeah. And so, yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
It takes courage to share so vulnerably. So thank you for being so sensitive, and thank you for sharing. Jesse, how about you?
I've got a story to tell about that too. And I want to preface it by saying I'm going to tell you a story that's probably not that unique. And I say that, and you'll see why, I think, as we go through it. But I think many of you out there know, and if you don't already know, I'm actually gay. And I'd like to say that I'm a Christian, but often you have to say you're a gay Christian because it seems like an oxymoron when I don't think it is. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't always so. So I grew up, as I said, in the Deep South where everybody is religious, right? Mm-hmm. Even if you don't go to church, you're religious. And so my family was Southern Baptist. Didn't go to church, but we were religious. It was a Christian household. And I got involved in church in a big way probably when I was about 14 or 15, kind of around the time you start high school. And got plugged into a Church of God, which is Pentecostal, pretty much the same kind of thing. Very big spirit-filled church, speaking in tongues, the whole lot. Now, that was not a great kind of church to be at for my parents' Southern Baptist sensibilities, right? You go to church and you hear a hymn, you take an offering, you hear a message, you go home. You know, holy rollers is what I think my family called. I don't know if y'all have heard that one, you know, because we roll around on the floor, right? Yeah. And so I church was really, really important to me because I had a lot of difficulties with my family. At the time, I was living with my dad and my stepmom. They had their own issues. My dad was quite an abusive man at the time. He was a bit scary. He was a bikie, you know, had the Harley, all of these sorts of things. And my mother was pretty absent because, and to this day, she had quite a bad drug addiction. So church is where I found family, right? I had people that loved me, that cared about me. I was very active. I did drama. I was in the worship team, went to youth service, all the kind of bits, and I loved it. It was great. It's fantastic. And then kind of around 16, I started kind of having feelings, right? Feelings that didn't seem to align with what I was taught the Bible was teaching us. So I came out to the youth pastor at the time and said, look, I'm having these feelings. I think I'm gay. And I don't know how to reconcile that with what we're teaching at the church. What do I do? And he said, the first thing is we can't have you on the worship team anymore. We can't have you in the drama team anymore. We can't have you doing the ushering anymore because you've got sin in your life. And you're gay because you have a homosexual spirit living in you. And that's what I was told. I couldn't talk to my family at this stage because if this was the reaction from the church, what was I supposed to do? And so I said, okay, well, that's fine. Jesus cast out demons, so surely there's hope, right? There's hope I can be good, I can be all these things. So they told me they were going to do an exorcism, right? And this is, you know, some of y'all might remember that I kind of was going to church. It was in the late 90s, early noughties, and they used to pour oil all over you. You couldn't wear nice clothes to church because they'd come home ruined because you'd have a bottle of olive oil poured over you. But we did all of that, and laying of hands, and had everyone praying for me to cast these spirits out, these demons that I had living in me. So did that. It didn't work. I'm still gay, everyone, surprise. And after the exorcism, I thought, okay, maybe it wasn't the church. Something must still be wrong with me because I haven't changed. So I prayed. I would pray daily. I would literally lock myself in the closet and pray for hours that God was going to change me. Mm. And that didn't work. So some things only happen through prayer and fasting. So what I had to do, the fasting part as well, right? Because that would, if I went that next step and showed God how devoted I was, then that would change me. And that didn't work either. Mm. And the church didn't say that I couldn't attend anymore. But eventually it got to the stage where they made me so uncomfortable that I couldn't go back. And that was kind of my family. That was, like I said, that was the family to me. So I told my father, and he was outraged. He said, I can't have you living in my house like that. That's not the way God made you. And I didn't raise you to be that way. And I'm not going to have people like you living in my house. And as I said, my father was quite an abusive man growing up, so I was very, very scared of him. And I ran away. I had to leave in the middle of the night. I remember packing some clothes and leaving at 16. And I moved around. I lived with some friends. I lived with my sister for a little while, who I'm still pretty close to. And her husband was a very cruel man. And I didn't stay there. And ended up, at the end, I ended up with my mother, who, despite her substance abuse problems and her own issues, she did love me and was, you know, she didn't have the capability to take care of me at the time, but I know she really, really loved me. Mm. And that's where I was until moving off to college. See, now I hope it makes sense maybe why I felt I needed to move countries to get a better life for myself, because this was what I was surrounded by. And I moved to Australia. I want to point out that I lost faith in the church, but I did not lose faith in God, right?
So good.
I still had my hope in him. And, flash forward, I'm now married, I've got a husband, I'm back at church, a church that I know loves me, a church that supported me, thank you. And some years ago, it was probably 3 or 4 years ago, I remember being home, and my father pulling me aside and saying, I'm really sorry for the way that we treated you. Wow. And we love you, yeah. And we're so happy for you. and to flow on from that, a couple of years ago, Bayside baptized me.
Yeah.
Pastor Rob baptized me.
Yeah.
And that was something that...
Here we go.
Yeah, oh, there we go. Yeah, that was something that I was told could never happen for me.
Wow. Yeah.
So you know, I didn't get to change, but the environment changed around me.
Yeah.
And Bayside, I told you, Pastor Sandra, from where I'm sitting, y'all are about 15 years in the making from where I'm standing.
Beautiful.
So thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you, Jesse. I just want to stipulate the courage. The courage it takes to share this story. And I want to thank you both, because it's not easy to share these stories, but we're family here. And, you know, it's important that we get to hear each other's stories and that it's a safe place to do so. You're both gems. You're both okay to continue?
I feel like we're sitting on Oprah's couch at the moment.
And there's a car for you, and a car for you, and a car for you.
I hope we get cars after this.
Thanks, Rob.
Oh, gosh. All right, so another character in the Bible that really impacts me when it comes to change is Jesus' mother, Mary. If you think about Mary, she was a teenage girl who, you know, pretty much had her life mapped out. She was a Jewish young teenager. She was betrothed. It was pretty much a drill as to what her life would look like. But then all of a sudden, one night, an angel appears and gives her another plan, a plan which she so willingly surrendered to. But let's not, we read it and we know the story, but change was thrust upon her in one way. So I want to ask you both, have you ever experienced something where change was maybe unexpected, unwanted, undesired, it was sort of thrust upon you that you'd like to share today? I'll give Jesse a break. Catherine, over to you.
Okay. So I was well and true. I've been 12 years a teacher at a Christian school, and through the pandemic, we had to flip to teaching online, and I was teaching VCE, and I was well and truly in the middle of being all things to all people and supporting all my students and leading, like helping some junior staff and that sort of thing, and I was doing awesome. But I started to get some stomach pains, and so I thought, this is strange, this is not me, invincible, thank you. I'm invincible. So I thought, I'll go and see my doctor, see what she thinks. And so she listened to what was going on in my life at that point in time and took some tests and did things like this, and she said, you're in burnout and you can keep doing what you're doing right now, but in maybe 5 to 10 years you'll probably have a heart attack. And I went, wow, but I'm invincible. This doesn't happen to me. And so she said, you're not going back to work. This was a year ago, I think it was October last year. You're not going back to work till next year, if at all. And I went, but I've got students who need me and they're doing exams soon and I've got to write reports. And she said, no. And it was like, but,
yeah,
but you can't, I can't stop. I have to keep going. And she said, no, you're stopping. And that was really, really hard. Mm. And she said that, you know, essentially she said that the principal's job is to manage it. And so I was like, but you don't understand.
Yes.
I have to do these things. These people need me. I'm indispensable. Not only am I invincible, but I'm indispensable. And it was actually the most difficult 6 weeks of my life to not be at school while my students were there. And I really only started to relax once the school year had finished.
So what were you coping with in the midst of that? What was the most difficult aspect of that?
Guilt.
Okay.
Yeah. I felt guilty that I'd abandoned my students, that I'd abandoned my peers, and that other people had to do the job that I was doing, and nobody could look after my students the way I could.
Yeah.
Obviously they can, but that's the world I was in. And I can chase that back to, I have to be perfect. I have to please people. I can't let anybody down. Mm. And so that was the thing I was dealing with at that point in time. And so I had the 6 weeks of really difficult time. Then I had the summer holidays and that was okay. because everyone was on holiday, so I wasn't letting anyone down. And I had actually already organised first term as long service leave, so that was good. So it ended up that I had 6 months off work. And through that, God was really good to me. He reminded me that I don't have to earn my worth, and I don't have to be all things to all people and that sort of thing. And it was gave me time to refocus and reassess how I wanted to move forward. And of course, he dropped the most ingenious idea into my brain, which I ended up, the person who was doing covering my long service leave has stayed there, and I'm now doing permanent CRT, and it's actually been really amazing. So it's a win-win-win-win-win on five levels.
So you've changed it for, you've taken up another opportunity in a different opportunity.
Exactly. So it was not a change that I wanted, but I also don't know what God was protecting me from when that happened. You know, who knows? You would have been very sad if I wasn't here.
Absolutely. No, and the warning was there.
I intend being here for a lot longer, and the lifestyle I was living wasn't unhealthy in that I was doing anything wrong, but I was doing too much right, I guess.
Mm. Yeah. You're running at a pace that was not sustainable.
Yeah, not sustainable. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. Well, thank you. Jesse, how about you?
Yeah, sure. I think for me, I've always been quite a career-driven person. So as I was sharing my story, I talked about how important kind of being here and kind of starting my career in HR. And a few years back, I was working at an organization in corporate, and there were a few things that I was asked to do that probably, well, morally, I didn't feel it was the right thing to do. And I'm sure there's people that work out there in corporate, and you probably know what I mean, around some of these meetings that happen behind closed doors and some of the conversations that happen. And that just wasn't me. And I really was butting heads with some of the executives at this organization and thought, I'm going to stand my ground, I'm going to do the right thing. And one day I went to scan my pass to print something, and it didn't work. Oh, yeah, exactly. I was kind of thinking something's up, right? And my manager, who was always late, was on time for a meeting and asked me to come into a room, and there was another executive sitting there, and I said, oh, I've been in many of these meetings on the other side, and I know what's about to happen. I wasn't fired because I guess it's kind of strange the way it works with the executive crowd. You just kind of make a divorce settlement kind of with the business, and they give you a piece of paper and off you go. But I had so much of my identity wrapped up in what I did. I didn't know who I was outside of my work. And this all happened so suddenly, and my team were so upset that it had happened. Yeah. And I went into probably one of the darkest periods of my life since things happened when I was younger. And I was totally lost. I had all these bills because I was, earning good money, and now I was like, oh, how am I going to pay all these bills? I've got things happening, and all I talked about was my job. Now I had nothing to talk about. My identity was so caught up in that, and now what was I to do? Mm. And I remember praying about it, saying, what's going on? And I felt in my heart, it was kind of like God telling me, you need to know who you are without your job. You need to know who you are in me. And this was before I'd come back to the church. And to be honest, had that event not happened, I don't think I would have ended back at Bayside, because it really frazzled me. I think I would, even though I believed in God, I felt I didn't need support of people around me because I could do it all on my own. Mm-hmm. And when this happened, I had to realize you can't. And it's really important to have that sense of community around you. And that's what really called me back. To church.
So how many years ago was that?
Oh, that would have been maybe around 4 years ago.
Oh, right. Yeah, so that really ago. Was
Yeah, it was really the precursor to leading me back. And wow. I found the sermon. I think that's what we call it, Pastor Rob, the sermon. Yeah, that's the one that brought me back in.
Fantastic. So how did you mentioned prayer. Is that the way you coped in the midst of that situation?
I think so. For me, it was prayer. It was also a lot of time to reflect. And I think sometimes we get so used to being around people all the time, we're so distracted, right? We've got Facebook and we've got Netflix and we've got our phones. It can be really scary to be by yourself with your thoughts. But I think being alone with just you and God is something that all of us need to probably do more of, because it's in those moments you really reflect. And for me, I heard him speak to me to come back to church, and I heard him really challenge me and saying, who are you? No, who are you really?
Wow, fantastic. So with both of your, all your stories of change, what have you learnt about God?
God never changes.
Yeah.
And if we stay looking at him in the middle of whatever's happening, we'll be fine. And that's what I think I said at the start. I used to look at change as an anxiety time. But over, well, how old am I now? Certain number of years being a Christian, I've built those muscles you were talking about, Jesse. So like, I've had to go through so many changes that now I'm just like, oh, it's another one. Okay, what's happening this time?
Yeah.
That I'm not meaning to be glib about it, because it is difficult, but I guess what I'm saying is I'm a bit quicker now to turn to God and go, oh, all right, what's happening now? What do you want me to do now? And what I've learned, one thing that's kind of a side quest, I've learned that prayer is about finding out from God what his plan is, instead of giving him my ideas of what I want to do and telling him to make it happen.
Yeah. So. Very good. Great learning. What about you, Jesse?
I'd have to agree. We serve a God that doesn't change. Our understanding of God changes, I think, as we mature and we get older. But I think when we try to resist some of those plans that God has for us, we're going to face the same challenge again, right? You end up in the wilderness, you end up in the belly of a fish, maybe, I don't know. But really, God is going to work the things out for you the way they are supposed to work out, and he will direct your path. And sometimes we get a little distracted and we fall off the path. But I think what's great about the God that we serve is he's a God of second chances and third chances and fourth chances.
Yeah.
And if we get lost, he will always be there to put us back on the path if we just reach out and grab onto his hand.
He is constantly faithful, and I think we sung that this morning. That's just amazing. Well, my last question to you both. In Romans 12:2, it says, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And we know, and you've probably touched on this already, we know that we're called to a life of transformational change in Christ, becoming more like him. Many people do fear change. What would you say to encourage people today about that?
It's kind of what I said before, like God doesn't change, and if you're focused on him, it makes it easier. And your security's in God and who he is, and it's not in your status or in stuff that you have or what people think of you. But it's really hard in our society where we're very much about our appearance, that to let go of that and to not pay attention to that. But you have to. You have to just forget what people are going to say, forget what people are going to think, because God's always got your best interests at heart.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful words. Jesse, you want to add to that?
I guess what I'm not going to say is everything happens for a reason. That's my first bit of advice. Because we often get told this, right? Everything happens for a reason.
Mm.
Everything does not happen for a reason. Some things just happen. Right. Sometimes things just happen and you have to roll with the punches. And speaking from Romans, I think Romans 8:28, in all things, God works out for the good, those that love him and are called according to his purpose. And I think that's what I mean. Yeah. Things will happen in your life. Unexpected things will happen. Not all storms are in the forecast. Right. But things will happen. And we as Christians, and this is not to be elitist, but we are so privileged and we are so lucky to have a God that is faithful to us. Mm. I think the real tragedy would be going through some of the situations we go through and not having that hope and that faith that we have in Christ.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. Can we give our hand round of applause?
I want to thank you both for coming up and sharing on this topic, sharing part of your lives, sharing part of your hearts with us. And, I know that I believe that it has impacted people here today. And so I want to thank you. Let's give them another round.